Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
It sure is, Keegan.
And we are doing a mini episode.
We are.
So what do you have this week? We didn't even talk about this before we started.
That's how organized we are. We were just talking about other shit. And I've been day drinking. It's great. It's fine. Whatever.
I'm actually not drinking right now, which is unusual for a nighttime recording.
I know. I just went out to lunch with my friend and then it turned into going to Foreman's and having sangria.
So what you're saying is you're not doing dry January.
Fuck no. Have you met me?
Yeah, absolutely not. I feel the same.
Have you met me? No. I've been really interested in reading about the potential Democratic candidates for the election.
I have that as well.
Because I know Elizabeth Warren this week put her
Did you happen to watch
toe in there?
So let's just jump in. We're kind of breaking our rule of starting with the worst, but you know what? This happened naturally, so let's talk about
this first.
So, did you happen to watch Elizabeth Warren's candidacy video that she put out?
I read the text from it. I wasn't able to watch the video.
I watched the video today. Maybe we can put a link to it somewhere.
Yeah. How do you feel?
It made me want to cry. So here's the thing. When I first heard that Elizabeth Warren was running, which she announced her candidacy via email.
On Monday, right?
Yeah, I think on Monday.
Yeah.
So she sent that to all of her supporters. My coworker got one. When I heard that she was going to be running, I had mixed feelings.
Yeah.
My first feeling, although I really like Elizabeth Warren and I admire her very, very much, but my first feeling wasn't one of excitement. It was one of concern.
You know, my first thought when I saw that she was running was, this is going to be Hillary all over again.
That's my concern. I mean, here's the thing. There are different politicians in that I think that in many ways, Elizabeth Warren is more likable, although ever since she announced her candidacy, everyone's calling her unlikable, which is bullshit.
But do you know about, so she was claiming that she is of Native American descent.
Right.
And so she had a DNA test done. And so Trump calls her Pocahontas, which is awful.
Right.
But so she's already been kind of made unpopular by that, which made me very tentative to get too far behind her right away.
I think a lot of people are feeling that. We don't want another Bernie situation.
Yeah.
I think that that's the concern.
Yeah.
And definitely I'm holding my breath until we see who else will be running.
Well, I've heard that Bernie is a possibility, but I love Bernie Sanders
so
much.
I have Bernie Sanders socks in that drawer right there. But
of course, I love him, but I'm really hoping that that doesn't go through. But I'm, at the end of the day, I'm still kind of rooting for Beto at this point.
From what I've heard, gosh, it's confusing. I mean, it's not confusing. It's complicated because Elizabeth Warren is by far more qualified. She has way more experience. And it's really frustrating to see a woman who is running who has more experience than really either of her counterparts that be discounted.
But do you know exactly the situation we are in right now is the same thing that happened with Obama and Hillary in 08?
Sure.
There was Hillary and there was Obama. And a lot of times, from what I've been reading, Beto has very much been compared to Obama in a lot of respects. Not necessarily politically or anything like that, but more in
his personality.
Personality, sure. Popularity, and the way of the political standpoint, where we're looking at Elizabeth Warren, who is a career politician. She has a long history in it, things like that. And then we're looking at Beto, who is more of the popular, up-and-coming type.
Right. I mean, I would argue, though, that Elizabeth Warren is a little bit less of a career politician as someone who started as a school teacher and then kind of went into being a senator.
Yeah.
And then, you know, from there has built
true.
Her.
No, it's true. She is different than Hillary Clinton in that way, but
she's not from money the way that Hillary, you know.
Right. To me, there seems to be some, and again, and as I'm checking my own sexism at this point, but there is kind of that same what's the word I'm looking for? That same trepidation when it comes to powerful women being in power, where it's not necessarily the way that I think, but the way that I'm thinking of it through other people's eyes is the way right. they look at Elizabeth Warren is the same way that they're looking at Hillary Clinton.
Well, my concern with Elizabeth Warren is less that she is actually a problem or actually unlikable, and more that she's going to be painted that way. Because she's already been painted
that
way.
That's what I'm saying, is that it's not, she is, there was a poll done on a website where she is actually the third most anti-Trump senator in the 115th, what's the word I'm looking for?
Don't know. I'm not sure.
But she's like she's the third senator that's most like anti-Trump out of all of them, basically, okay. is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. She is been said to be just below the liberal mark of Bernie Sanders. She has a lot of the same socialist thoughts and beliefs as Bernie Sanders does, which I think is really great. She has a lot of the similar, she doesn't take from big donors.
Right. She's very anti-corporation.
Thank you.
She's extremely anti-corporation, and she's kind of, like, built her campaign around that. In fact, this is kind of, like, a bit from that video that she posted on her website. It says, "I've spent my career getting to the bottom of why America's promise works for some families, but others who work just as hard slip through the cracks into disaster. And what I found is terrifying. These aren't cracks that families are falling into. They're traps. America's middle class is under attack. How did we get here? Billionaires and big corporations decided they wanted more of the pie, and they enlisted politicians to cut them a fatter slice. They crippled unions so no one could stop them, dismantled the financial rules meant to keep us safe after the Great Depression, and cut their own taxes so they paid less than their secretaries and janitors."
Yeah.
She has been, I'm conflicted. I will support Elizabeth Warren for as much as I can until I see who she's running against.
Exactly.
Because I'm conflicted because I think Elizabeth Warren will make a fantastic president.
Of course.
And I don't think that we should sideline her because we're afraid of other people being upset about women in power.
But look at what happened.
Which I understand. I totally understand. But if we have that mentality forever, then we will never have a female president.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Is that it's hard that we have this history of fear that's embedded in us now, where we're afraid of women taking that chance and stepping into that place of power, because we saw how this woman was completely torn apart in 2016.
Right. I mean, it's concerning, but I'm not going to get ahead of myself and be too worried about it right now, because I understand the trepidation, and I have trepidation as well, because Elizabeth Warren is so outspoken that outspoken woman who is smart and strong equals unlikable bitch to a lot of other people, which is terrible.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm going to tentatively say I'm happy about it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I'm taking from all of this is that from what I've been reading about our potential Democratic candidates is I'm seeing a vast array of people who want to see real positive change happen.
Right.
From the viewpoints that you and I very much agree with.
Yeah.
So I'm not really feeling negative about it, because I feel like no matter what way it goes, we have a possibility of a lot of really wonderful, smart people
True.
Who want to have
True.
That role.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to take a look at the big picture, mm-hmm. see who is available. I will vote with my heart in the primary. Yep. As I did last time, I voted for Bernie in the primary. I will vote same. With my heart in the primary. But whoever gets that ticket, if they're going up against Trump, I'm going to vote for the same way I did for Hillary. It's 100%. The same way I did for Hillary. So it's like, I'm going to just kind of take it as it comes. But for now, good for you, Elizabeth.
Right.
Like, happy for you.
And I think it's good that you and I continue to talk about the people who are coming up and saying that they want to run for president, because I think it's good to be as informed as we possibly can be, but at the same time, keeping an open mind that all of these people, honestly, anybody is going to be better than Trump.
Right.
You know what
honestly.
I mean? But it's good for us to continue talking about it and to see the ups and downsides to these different Democratic candidates.
Right. The perfect candidate doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
There's a lot that I love about Beto. I don't love so much that he is not as experienced. But there's a lot of other things that I really like about him. That also, if he was running for president, if he had a good vice president, that could help. You know, so there are factors.
But you know what I love about this right now, Keegan? Like, think about this. We started this podcast. We talked about this, doing this show, on the train, on the way back, after Trump was inaugurated.
Right.
From the march
November
that we did.
9th. Or yeah. It was a couple days after that.
And we were so beaten feeling.
Yeah.
Feeling. And brokenhearted. And we talked about doing this show because we wanted to be able to make some sort of difference. And the fact that now, a year later, we are able to talk about the possibility of a new adventure, a new possibility. There really is a sense of hope that
yeah.
I really feel like we haven't felt in a while.
Yes.
And so talking about this, I feel like really brings me a sense of possibility,
yeah.
really, and feeling like there's an end to everything.
Yeah, if you want to feel some hope, watch that video, because it did fill me with that. Like, it did give me hope. It was like, oh my gosh, like, we, you know, in 2 years from now could be done with this,
yeah.
you know?
And it doesn't mean it's going to happen, you know? Like, bad things, we've learned. Like, you think that a good thing is going to happen and it's going to completely flip. But I think that more than anything, people like you and I right now really do, much like Obama's campaign, we need that hope back in our hearts.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So I feel
this
like...
this is the turning point. It's like,
it is.
Things are very bad for Trump right now. 2019 is not set up to be a good year for
nope.
him, legally or in any other way.
Yep.
And at the same time, we're going to start seeing these political candidates come forward and be able to make, you know, good educated decisions about who we want to be our next president.
And I feel like for the first time in a long time, I'm starting to almost see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's not quite there. I don't know if it's going to be there or not, but I feel like I'm leading towards something that could potentially be a light
I'm
at the end of the tunnel.
I'm feeling hopeful, but with caution, because there is always...
Who thought Trump would be president?
And
who thought?
And short of Trump getting arrested or stepping down, he could go for another term.
He could.
And he could win.
He could.
So we need
you
to
never know.
We need to prepare our hearts for that as well.
I mean, I really don't think he will at this point, because I think that he's even let his followers down so much. But you never know.
You don't know.
He weaseled his way into his first election. Who
knows?
But... you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, what else you got for us, Keegan?
Okay, so this, I would say, is probably the most annoying thing that's happened.
I'm wondering if it's the same thing that I have. Continue.
So Louis C.K. is back.
Yes!
Yeah. So Louis C.K. is back. There was a leaked audio on YouTube of a 45-minute set that he did. And it's obnoxious. Listen, it's very upsetting to me because... I feel like he's always done things, his shtick has always kind of been off color, like that's kind of been his thing.
Yeah.
However, I feel like he is so woe is me. He came out on stage and was basically like, how terrible has my year been?
Yeah.
How rough has my life been? He didn't come out with any kind of sincerity about the things he's done or any apologies really about the things that he's done. And in fact, I think he... swung really far the other direction because he realizes that the left is not here for him anymore.
Definitely.
And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to say some really fucking terrible shit on the other side of that spectrum and just be like a grumpy old man that maybe will appeal to people on the right.
Yeah.
So he made fun of the Parkland students.
That, for me, he did a lot of really awful things, but for me, him making fun of the Parkland students, that's not even a left-right issue. That's just straight up
terrible person issue.
Yeah. And evil.
Well, yeah, it's a terrible person issue.
Yeah.
I think it's so disheartening for me with Louis C.K. because... he kind of fooled us all into believing he was an ally.
He did.
You know, like
I remember reading when we were starting to do Man Crush Mondays, and I was looking at feminist men. I remember it was a really old list, but Louis C.K. was on it.
Right. Well, because he was always very, very open about his privilege as a white man.
Exactly.
Like, always very open about that.
But then he comes out, and then this leaked audio was incredibly racist as well.
So he said about the Parkland students, this is a quote from that audio, he said, they testify in front of Congress, these kids. What are you doing? You're young. You should be crazy. You should be unhinged. Not in a suit saying, I'm here to tell you. Fuck you. You're not interesting because you went to a high school where kids got shot. Why does that mean I have to listen to you? Why does that make you interesting? You didn't get shot. You pushed some fat kid in the way, and now I gotta listen to you talking.
I just...
Yeah.
Like, even you just reading that again now, just like...
Yeah.
It triggers something in me that is so painful and so ignorant.
You're talking about kids who have survived trauma.
Yeah. It's like, oh, so, and you said something else about, oh, you got shot. Why does that mean I have to, or you, or no.
You were at a school where kids got shot.
Yeah, you didn't get shot. Why do I have to listen to you? And there's something, like, it almost brings me to tears. It's
a visceral reaction.
Like,
yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, and he also made some statements about, gender pronouns and how he thinks that they're stupid and basically compared, you know, calling yourself they or them as calling yourself a there, like an object. And I'm not going to read that one because I just think it's so vulgar that I just don't want to.
Yeah. Well, have you read Ricky Gervais's tweets that were kind of like in defense of Louis C.K.?
No.
So I'm on Fox News right now that I'm reading to, right? Ricky Gervais went on a Twitter rant that many believe to be inspired by the backlash his friend and fellow comedian Louis C.K. is receiving over leaked audio said that he mocked gender nonconforming people and survivors of the Parkland shooting. The star took to Twitter to discuss the concept of a subject being off-limits for comedy, arguing that things are either funny or they're not. He says, please stop saying you can't joke about anything anymore. You can. You can joke about whatever the fuck you like. And some people won't like it, and they will tell you they don't like it. And then it's up to you whether you give a fuck or not, and so on. It's a good system, he wrote on New Year's Eve. He added, there is no subject out of bounds. People often get offended when they mistake the subject of a joke with the actual target. It all depends on the joke. And to
me, I don't think that that's necessarily in defense of Louis C.K.
Well, I think it was that he had put it out after that happened.
Yeah, I think it's in defense of comedy. Comedy very often makes jokes of subjects that are distasteful, and that's okay.
I think there's a place for that. Comedy, you know, I mean, both of us are fans of My Favorite Murder. We're fans of some other podcasts where they talk about very serious issues, but they're comedy podcasts. But I feel like there's a way to have a comedic outlook, an uplifting outlook on things that are tragic in a way that is respectful, in a way that is not. And by saying that you can make any joke that you want and how it's not your fault, how people react, I think is kind of fucked up.
I think there's a certain amount of empathy that needs to be involved to be good at comedy.
Exactly.
I think you can make any joke that you want. It doesn't necessarily make it funny, and it doesn't necessarily make you funny. I also don't think, outside of this joke, these jokes just being offensive, I don't think that joke is funny. Like, I went, when I was on the cruise and they had, like, comedians doing stand-up every night, there is a certain subset of comedians whose whole shtick is, I'm old and I don't understand young people.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't find those jokes funny. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like, it's not that, because Jerry Seinfeld has come out and said a lot of shit about that. Like, oh my God, political correctness and fuck this.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Jerry, you're not
funny anymore. We don't relate
Kramer's
to your comedy.
Awful Absolutely. Stand-up?
Absolutely. But the thing is, don't tell us that we have no sense of humor because we're not laughing at your bad jokes.
Well,
like,
but
your
honestly,
jokes aren't funny anymore.
I know, but I feel like what he's saying is that it's okay to joke about things that are completely distasteful. I think if you're going to write a joke about something that is tragic, it has to still be with the thought in mind of the survivors or the people who have been through this tragedy in a certain way that's going to be empathetic. If somebody were to make a horrible 9/11 joke, we would not take that lightly. I feel like when it comes to comedy, yes, free speech, whatever. You're allowed to say whatever you want. But I also feel like you have to have a certain understanding and empathy, like you said, in order to say those jokes and still have a meaning beneath them in order for people to
receive
them well.
That's only if that's your goal. Like, I don't know that that's Louis C.K.'s goal
but
here.
But then he shouldn't say it. That's what I'm saying. Well, but, is that like...
I don't know. I think maybe we're saying different sides of the same thing. Because I don't necessarily think he shouldn't say it. In fact, I think he should say it. I'm like, at this point, I'm like, let your colors be shown. Like, if that's who you want to be...
Oh, because he's a fucking
that's
asshole.
Fine.
Yeah.
You're just an asshole. Right. And he did say at the end of his set, he did say, what are you gonna do? Take away my birthday? My life is over. I don't give a shit. So that's his shtick now. It's burn it all down. Like, he doesn't care.
No,
that's why
true.
He's doing
this. I mean, I think I'm thinking more comedians that are not Louis C.K. when I say things like that, because I think that Louis C.K. knows that, you know, a lot of his fan base is gone when it comes to people that have feelings. And he's ready to burn it all to the ground. But I think that...
But you know, it didn't have to be over for him, truly. Like, if he had come out with a real, true apology, and even if he had come out doing stand-up again, I was listening to Daily Zeitgeist, and they were talking about this, and they were saying how Richard Pryor, when he lit himself on fire smoking crack, he knew when he came back to do stand-up that he needed to make himself the butt of that joke.
Exactly.
You know, and come out and, like, acknowledge the thing that happened.
Well, Louis C.K. is digging himself a bigger hole.
Right, because he didn't come out and make himself...
And if that's
his
choice...
He's throwing a pity party for himself.
That's his choice. You know what I mean? And there are still people who are standing behind him and
always will be, though.
And it's
always will be.
But I'm more so, when I say the things that I said, I'm more so talking about other comedians and jokes in general, where it's like, I feel like if you are trying to be well-intentioned, you should make a well-intentioned joke that has some sort of empathy behind it.
I agree.
If that's not your intention, what am I to say?
But I think a lot of these people who are doing really, like, you know, offensive jokes are not trying to.
No.
Be empathetic in
your
any
funeral
way. And that's on you. Yeah. And like, in fact, I'd rather you do that because then I know not to listen to you.
Exactly.
I don't think it's funny.
I think you're completely right.
Comedy like that.
I think you're completely right.
Do you have anything else?
I was going to talk about Bird Box. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, you go first.
Let's talk about Bird Box. I just wanted to have a conversation with you, which we already kind of started before this.
Oh, okay.
Because that was my only, like, it's not even lighthearted, but that was like my only lighthearted thing for the week. I haven't even finished it yet because it has, like, emotionally ruined me.
Really?
And I've had to take it in, like, sections. But I know you've watched it.
I have watched
it. Because my worst date is posted about it, and that killed me. If this is going to work, you have to listen to everything that I say.
It was, like, me in a relationship, but it was a meme of Sandra Bullock, where she's like, if this is going to work, you have to do everything that I say. And I'm like, yeah, that's funny.
Yes, that's exactly right. So everybody's been talking about this movie, and
it's very polarizing. Some people did not like it.
I mean, I love it. I think it's such a great movie. So last night, I had just had dinner with my boyfriend, and I'm like, I really want to see this movie, Bird Box. And he thought I was talking about Bird Cage with Nathan Lane and Robin Williams.
Also a great movie.
I know, he doesn't want to watch it with me. He's like, I don't think I would like it. And I'm like, you're going to love it. Just wait.
Bird Cage is a great movie.
Right? So he was kind of like, and I was like, no, Bird Box, Sandra Bullock. It's like a freaky horror movie or thriller or whatever you want to call it. And he was like, okay, fine, we'll watch it. Long story short, last night he had a panic attack. I started crying. It's a whole thing. So we stopped watching it. So we woke up this morning and, like, with our coffees, we're, like, watching it for, like, an hour and a half. And it took a toll on me.
Just that, anxiety level?
I mean, I'm one of those people that, like, when I watch things, I start to take on, like, the emotions of the people that I'm seeing on screen, which is why I had a hard time with Haunting of Hill House, too. I would have to kind of take that in portions as well. My God, that thing took me for a trip.
That shit's my favorite stuff. Like, I think I've watched just too much Walking Dead and too many horror movies to, like, feel
But this felt
anything.
Different. I love horror movies and I love thrillers. Like, you and I used to watch Exorcist movies all the time.
Yes.
That shit doesn't affect me. It's fine. Whatever. But there was something, it was the tone of this movie that just, like, really fucked with me.
Interesting.
But I was like, but I love it. Like, I can't wait to finish it and watch it. Like, I love this movie so much, and I think that's what makes it so great, is that it's putting me in that same place.
Yeah.
And it reminded me a lot of, like, Quiet Place.
It is a lot like Quiet Place.
But instead of not being able to say anything, you can't see anything.
Yeah, the blind version. That's what I said to Anthony. I was like, it's like a blind version of The Quiet Place.
But I guess the author of the book started writing it in 2009 and then started writing the screenplay in 2014. Or maybe, no, the book came out in 2014, and then I think they started writing the screenplay after that. So it came out before Quiet Place.
Yeah, I wonder when Quiet Place was written, though, because sometimes it takes a while.
I just watched an interview with Emily Blunt, and she was saying that while she was filming Mary Poppins, her husband was writing Quiet Place.
Okay, yeah,
so
John
it couldn't have been too long ago.
No.
But it, guys, it's really good, and I highly suggest you watch it. If anything...
You let me know what you think when you get to the end, because that's the part that people are upset about. And I wasn't upset about the ending.
Upset?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of upset?
Like, they feel like the ending's a cop-out.
Oh.
And I disagree. I disagree. Okay. But we'll talk about that after you've seen it.
Yeah, I just wanted to have that conversation with you over the air because it's such a big thing that everybody's talking about right now.
It's definitely in the zeitgeist right now. Like, hard. So many. Yeah. So many memes.
It's amazing. Like, Sandra Bullock is
She's always amazing.
Anything with Sarah Paulson in it, I will watch. Yeah. I love her.
John Malkovich is an asshole, but also, that's how you survive.
Oh, God. I mean, I just, like... That movie just took me on a roller coaster of emotions that I cannot even explain. So you guys, please message us on Instagram or email us your thoughts on this movie because I really want to know how everybody else is taking this because I feel like a crazy person.
Strong female protagonist.
Oh, so strong. Yeah. So wonderful, but also so cold.
Very cold.
Oh my God, when she's talking to those kids.
She's almost unrealistically cold in a way that I'm like, I don't know that I buy that.
But they do have the background set up for her and certain things like that where I kind of understand it. But yeah, it very, very cold. But I would be really, the reason I want to talk about it is because I was really interested in A, what you thought of the movie, and B, what everybody else who's listening to this episode thinks of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to finish it tonight, so you guys won't spoil anything if you message me or message us tonight, that would be fine. Or tomorrow, or yeah, tonight, because we're putting this out on Friday.
Yeah, totally.
So send me a message. Send us a message. Why do I keep talking about myself?
It doesn't matter.
I'm so conceited.
Same diff.
Send us a message. Let me know what you think of this movie because it has fucked me up.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So we'll talk about it once you finish it.
It's so good, but like, fuck,
it's beautifully done. It's beautifully shot.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Freaking Machine Gun Kelly.
I know. I had no idea who that person was.
Are you in this movie?
I know. And then Max was talking about it. I was like, who the fuck is that?
That's the only thing where I was just like, he did not need to be here.
No.
Give that job to an actor.
That whole storyline, too. I was like, what? We don't need this.
It served one purpose.
For them to...
Yeah, we can't talk about that on air.
I mouthed it as well.
No, no spoilers. Okay, I have one last thing. And this, I think you're going to get a kick out of. So...
I like getting a kick out of things. Tell me.
A musical adaptation of Nicholas Sparks' novel... The Notebook.
Stop!
Is coming to Broadway.
Stop!
Oh my God, it gets so much better. This is designed to, like, this is designed to make you become a puddle of tears in your seat.
You guys. You
don't even understand.
Okay. I have, like, my hands on my face. I can't handle this right now.
It gets better. Tell me. Hang in there.
Everything.
So, singer-songrighter... Ingrid Michaelson is writing the music.
Stop.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Like, my 2004 self is losing my mind. And the person who's writing the book for the musical is one of the writers from This Is Us. We're going to die. We're literally going to die.
Oh my God.
We're going to cry our faces off.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Just for the sake of this podcast... I don't care if we have to go to New York. We have to see it and then do an episode about
it. Yeah, I think so.
Did you know that the Notebook episode we did is like number 3 of all time?
Yeah, people really liked that.
That's great.
People love pop culture.
We talk about so much good shit.
No, but I love that. I love talking about pop culture, honestly. I was thinking about other problematic movies we should probably watch. Yeah. But
let's do it again soon.
Yeah, I definitely love... Go back, listen to our Notebook episode if you want to know my feelings about the Notebook.
Yeah.
Highly problematic movie for a myriad of reasons. Yeah. Still freaking love that movie. Don't care.
Yeah.
Still love it. Don't care.
Oh my God. How did I not hear about this?
I don't know, but I'm very excited. I'm very excited. It seems like it's a ways off from being completed because it was just announced.
I can't believe This Is Us.
This Is Us. Oh. Ingrid Michaelson, The Notebook. This is going to be the most intense experience of my, like, yeah. adult life.
I mean, when you first said it, I was like, what the fuck? And then as you kept going, I was like,
oh, no, I'm excited
shit.
About it. I can't wait.
Like, but, like, there's also this weird thing about all these weird musical adaptations.
I am tired of that. Amazing Spider-Man didn't need to happen.
No.
Like, that did not need to be a musical
Bono. Even things like Mean Girls and Bring It On, I'm just kind of like, I'm sure there's great Legally Blonde. Like, I've heard this great music that comes
out of
it. I like
Legally Blonde's music.
I haven't seen it. And I'm sure the music is wonderful because these songwriters are beautiful and talented and wonderful. But it's kind of just like, why?
Well, remakes in general kind of get on my nerves because I'm like, can we not write new movies?
Leave Well Enough Alone.
Like, I heard that The Craft is being done again, and I'm like, that seems unnecessary. I love The Craft. That's a problematic fave, probably. But
I haven't seen it. I know about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's so great.
I don't think I've seen it.
It might not even actually be that problematic. I think I'm conflating it with something else. But anyway, I love the Craft. It's a great movie. But yes, The Notebook, Broadway, musical. I can't wait. I'm going to go see it. The
Holy
end.
Shit. The end. Well, you guys, that's all I have.
Yeah, that's all I have too.
Sweet. We are so good
so
at making
good.
It right at 30 minutes.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
You guys, this is our first episode of 2019.
Oh, hey. Welcome to 2019, listeners.
Isn't that crazy?
Hi. Yes, Hi. It is. It's weird.
It's very weird, but also it's very, there is a cleansing effect that happens
every new year.
A little bit every new
yeah.
year. And
yeah.
Keegan and I were just talking about, you know, ways we want our lives to change and better them.
Intentions.
Personally, things like that. And there is something so hopeful about it. So I hope that you guys are all thinking of ways that you can better yourselves, better your lives, better the people around you.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing to think of in the new year. We are going to be... Our deadline for our Ask Me Anything questions is going to be January 14th. So
yeah,
we've gotten
a lot of really, really good ones.
Oh, my God. I mean, we already could probably do a whole episode on what you guys have already sent us, but we really would like to get more
yeah.
so that Keegan and I can really make it as jam-packed as possible. You guys have got 11 days, January 4th. 10 days, because it's coming out tomorrow.
Yes,
you guys have 10 days to send in your questions. January 14th is going to be the cutoff. The best ways to send us your questions are either to email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or to send us a direct message on Instagram at @angryneighborhoodfeminist. You can also follow us on Twitter at @yanfpodcast, Y-A-N-F podcast. Listen to us on Radio Public. It's a really big help. Be sure
rate and review.
Thank you. Rate and review us on iTunes. You can also do that on Facebook, which is really cool. We also have a Facebook group and a business page that you can follow us on.
I think that's all the things.
I always, like, whenever I get to the end of that list, I'm always like, there's got to be more.
I know.
Right?
I always feel like I'm leaving something out, but I don't think
so. I'm like, is that it?
You have to do the mental catalog.
Is that it? We're good? We should just have, like, a list. And
I know,
like,
honestly.
Go through it and be like, okay, I did all the things. I did what I have to do. Otherwise, my mom gets so unhappy.
You get just, you wake up to a bunch of text
messages.
It's
just like, Madigan, why didn't you tell him to write and review? Sorry, Mom. I'm sorry I've disappointed you again.
Well, I think I'm going to get some alcohol before we record our full-length episode.
I think I need another cup of coffee.
Yeah.
I feel like you need to, like, rise up in intoxication, and
yes.
I need to just continue to level
Precisely.
Down in
yes.
intoxication. I had to have my boyfriend drive me here tonight because I was like, I feel okay, but, like, in case I'm not, can you drive?
Yeah, better safe than sorry when
right.
it comes to that.
Exactly. So, all right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. And with all of that being said, we encourage you to
rage on.
Bye.